Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that was his NFL best fifth consecutive game with 100-plus yards from scrimmage.
He was elite in a lot of different ways. I think, and Wes mentioned it, maybe one of his best runs. You've been waiting on the explosive run. Like, he's so good at getting 10, 12, 15 at times. That long explosive run we've kind of waited on for Bijan. And obviously his numbers kind of reflect that when you look back on what he was yesterday. Tyler Allgeier, same way. Tyler Allgeier, this wasn't like a game where you're like, well, it's a Bijan game. No, it was an Allgeier game too. He gets 5.4 yards a carry as well. I just think that he's operating at such a high level, as is this offensive line in their running game. Now, they had their issues as far as pass protection goes, but Bijan continues to be one of the highlights of Atlanta's offense, right? Really their entire football team. I don't know how you can say Bijan's not the best player on the team at this point. He does everything well that you ask a running back to do in the NFL.
And he had those two touchdowns as well. Also want to point out he's one of only three players to have seven such games this season, joining Alvin Kamara and Saquon Barkley. So again, only guys to have a five best consecutive game with 100 plus yards from scrimmage.
It wasn't a Bijan or Tyler Allgeier game, but it was interesting to me that you had three cracks at first and goal, and it's not all Tyler Allgeier's fault. You had penetration on every freaking play, even including fourth down.
Yeah.
But it took Bijan's style, the way he can get hit and bounce forward.
Slight wiggle.
And get in the end zone on the fourth and goal. I love Tyler, but that is the elite versus the very good.
The word you're looking for is vision. And, right? There's just a slight bit of vision that it seems like Tyler Allgeier runs tough but almost runs blind at times.
Yeah.
And Bijan does not. It's like, how can I make a slight quarter body wiggle to kind of maneuver myself into a good situation?
It's the difference in running through you and bouncing off of you and staying on your feet. And it's just this vision and
contact balance.
Yes.
Contact balance.
The touchdown run I want to talk about real quick, because my vantage point, it was right in front of us. We're on that, I believe it, as Wes would call it, the east end zone, Tiff. And he gets outside and he gets contact and he breaks, I believe, Will Harris's tackle, but he's off balance and he starts stumbling, and I go, well, and this is the thing that's happened to him so many times where he goes to bust it, but he's getting contacted and it's enough to slow him where someone can grab him. Right. And then he sits up, steps on it, and Tyrann Mathieu contacted him at the 9 or 10 yard line and he carried him 3 yards into the end zone.
Yeah.
That is strength, power, whatever it is, balance, I don't care what you call
it's
it.
All of it.
It is elite.
Combined. But again, I mentioned those names in Kamara and Saquon Barkley. Again, guys that have had seven games with the stats that I had mentioned before this season. He's in some really good company and in the company of guys who have been in the league for years.
To your point, Bo, I think when you look at that goal line situation, how many times have I gone on here and said, I think the Falcons are almost better off not getting in short yardage. Like, I think it's nice when you get chunks and get close on first and second down, but I'd almost rather the Falcons be in third and four than third and one. And I don't know what the reason – that's been a continued issue that has developed under Arthur Smith and has continued into what this regime is. We're better off going side to side and run a wide zone. That's what our offensive line is built for. So when you get in close yardage situations and try to go north and south, we're just not good at it. We're just simply not good at it. You know, not enough weight moving forward, not enough inertia, if you will, up the middle of the offensive line. And you have to rely on guys like Bijan in those situations.
So can you count it as a win based on Bijan's performance? No, it doesn't really work that way, does it?
No, I don't think you can.
No. No. A lot of missed opportunities for the Falcons. They fall 20-17 to the Saints. Kirk Cousins, the quarterback, he joined Dave Archer of the Falcons Radio Network. This interview is brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta.
Kirk, obviously the disappointing in the way things turned out, had some chances at the second half, but a little bit of a slow start. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, it's all running together right now, Arch. But, yeah. We convert the first third down of the game. The second third down, we have. The ball's just a little bit too far for Drake, but it's there, that's one I want back. You convert that third down, you're possibly in scoring position at that point, and so that could have eliminated a slow start. We could have come out in the first possession and gotten points. So that's where my mind goes, but after that, it all runs together.
Probably not fair for me to state it that way, because you just said there were a couple of moments there that might have been able to change what that felt like. Tell me about the run game. You guys got the run game cranked up. Bijan was special today, it looked like.
Yeah, we were getting good chunks. Trying to stay ahead of the chains the best we could, but certainly ran the football well enough to win from their standpoint, and wish we had been able to build off of that more and turn it into points.
What is it they do it looked like they did a pretty good job of plaster coverage or sticky coverage early on, mm-hmm. and then you guys were able to kind of penetrate that and start to get it going.
Yeah, they were playing tight, grabby coverage, and it was hard to get the space we were looking for, but that's pro football, and you're going to have tight coverage, and we just got to be able to catch and throw in it. And Saints defense did a good job all day long.
You got a good kick start from your defense in the second half. They come out, Jesse makes a play, yep. Made a couple guys make. They had four consecutive three and outs for you guys to help you get back in the game.
Yeah, that was big. We just had to score more points. We had time of possession. We moved the football. We stayed on the field. But we didn't score points. And, we shouldn't be leaving it in the field goal team's hands. We should be able to finish drives with six, and when you settle for field goals, it tends to make it hard to pull away.
All right, last thing for you, and this may not be fair, but is it frustrating for you because you guys are really good on offense, but there's those moments where you're not where you want to be, but is that part of the growth process as you go through 17 games?
Yeah, I just think we can be better. We haven't played our best football. We're leaving things out there, and anytime you do that, it's extremely frustrating. So you come back to work and you try to put together that game next Sunday. But, it's tough when you know how much offense we left out there today.
Kirk, thanks for your time.
Yep. Thanks, Arch.
Again, that was Kirk Cousins joining Dave Archer of the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network post a loss to the Saints. But again, the one thing you can take out of the loss is that they're still in control in the division, if there is.
Well, yeah, there's
some
a lot
sort of positive.
There's a lot of things to take out of the loss. There are a lot of positives, unfortunately. You don't ever want to hear that coming off a game like that. There are a lot of positives to take away. I hear it in Kirk's voice. I don't think I've seen all season Kirk as frustrated as he was during this game. I don't know if you guys saw it. He at one point kind of gets hit and falls to the turf, forces an incompletion. He pounds the turf. He's kind of animated on the sideline, having conversations with different guys. Kirk also... But you'll have to help me. I think that there was four tipped balls. I think there were four tipped passes in this game that resulted in incompletions. Granderson had a couple of them. There were just a number of times
Peyton
that there
Turner
were tipped balls. There were checkdowns that how Kirk does. He works through his reads, and then if you can, you check down left to either Bijan or Ray. That happens in this offense more times than not. You trust him to put a move on whoever's the flat defender and kind of get towards north and south towards the first down. Just a number of tipped balls. Unfortunate pass protection things. You and I were just talking about Caleb McGarry and the Cam Jordan sack. Caleb appears to get run over. He gets kicked in the back of the leg by Bijan, who's trying to help him in pass pro, so it ends up being really an ugly sack. Jake Matthews had a couple of them. Obviously, the sack fumble. So Kirk he was frustrated. He's pounding the turf. He's looking at what he's seeing downfield and the fact that we talked about it all week last week. That is a team in the secondary that is missing a lot of pieces. And I thought that he led with it right there in the interview with Dave. They were grabby, grabby coverage. We couldn't get separation. So I think he was frustrated all the way around, protection, receivers, as well as the officials not calling some of the stuff that he was able to look at down the field.
Well, they kind of do some of the things that I think at times we would like to see our guys do, and that's come up and play at the line and get hands on guys immediately and disrupt the routes and keep you from just, running downfield. And I think that was some of his frustration, is there was a lot of grabbing and holding. I saw multiple. I remember at least three tip balls. Four might be accurate. It's it's harder. Probably some of the hardest things for me in the world is going back through and kind of remembering every single play. It's why I need to grab it. I normally have my iPad going during the show watching replays to remind myself of things and things that was said and the conversations I had on and off the air. Or off the air because I don't ever talk. But it's not easy. And I also think, you know, some of the tip balls is kind of, they probably saw some stuff on film. Kirk has a, and I noticed it yesterday, he makes a throw to Drake across the middle. It's a completion. It's a phenomenal window throw by Kirk. But it almost looked like he dropped the angle of his arm a little slightly to deliver the ball because of the window that he had to get through. And I wonder if, and it's something that I'll probably talk to Arch before we talk to him on the air about, because I want to get some thought. I don't want to waste a question with him, but I wonder if they saw something where it allowed them to do that. But also, I think they got away with some pass interference and some defensive holdings. And it's
like, the most penalized secondary in the NFL.
Yeah, and you only got a couple, and those were absolutely egregious ones.
Ridiculous.
That they called. They could have called it the Alante Taylor, I believe it was Alante Taylor on Kyle Pitts. Kyle makes a catch, it's a 23-yard gain. It was the play before the Bijan touchdown run.
Incredible play.
It's an incredible play because he's being dragged to the ground
as
he makes the catch, and he somehow still makes it.
Yeah.
It's
one of the best catches he's made as a Falcon. It was unreal. I couldn't believe he brought it down.
Yeah, and you know what the worst part is that if he doesn't make the catch, there's no flag. And so you just, that's another missed opportunity. And I believe that was a third down play.
I think it was.
So
I think you're right.
I think those are some of the frustrations, but also it's the missed opportunities. And nothing frustrates you more, as I'm sure, as a quarterback, than missed opportunities, because you're the leader of that that unit.
How does a team survive five interceptions? Their quarterback throwing five and still pull off the win. The latest NFL headlines are on the other side when we go in the huddle. This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart. Lasting.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Clean. We are back and going in the huddle here on the morning shift. Some surprising events played out on Sunday with the Lions beating the Texans 26-23. Jared Goff threw five interceptions in this game, but the Lions were able to come back as Jack Bates made a 52-yarder as time expired.
I we're going to probably play it in Man Up coming in here in 40 minutes, but I can't win a Lions game. We've had to bet three Lions games in the last 4 weeks. I can't win a Lions game to save my life when we have to gamble on it.
We didn't have to bet that. You bet that on your own.
Did
stupidity.
I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to bet the Steelers game.
I only lost it by a point, so stupidity is kind of a heavy-handed word. All right. Thank you very much. They still won the game. It was just a four-point line. Thank you very much.
I'm just saying the fact that you picked it is only on you with your history.
What would have been dumber, I don't know if you saw it, was the Missouri game. We'll get into that at the top of the hour. I won that game, but I had no business winning that game.
Dude, when I saw how that ended, I was like, I was so mad because I felt like Oklahoma rescued you.
I know.
And I just was so mad at, and I'm a Venables guy, but I was very mad at him for helping rescue you, because I could have gained a game on you.
Absolutely brutal when it comes to that,
Tiffany, I feel like Detroit has one unit that is truly elite, and I think they have a good offense, but they have played really good at times. I mean, Jared Goff has played phenomenal at times. However, week in and week out, the elite unit for that team is their defense. And they rescued you again because they made Houston do something that good offenses don't, you're not supposed to do, and that's kick field goals.
Yeah.
When they turn the ball over five times and you have to kick four field goals in the game and only make they made three or four, but that's a win for the defense.
Yeah, it is. And Houston with 23 points in the first half, zero in the second half. So obviously a ton of adjustments being made. I thought that Houston played extremely well throughout the first half. I thought they'd win this game running away, and then in the end, like you said, the Lions dig their heels in and are able to come back and make it happen with the kicking game. So that's nice. There are a number of teams like that throughout the NFL. Lions, dude, they're elite. Point blank, they're elite. We're going to see two elite teams match up next weekend with the Bills and the Chiefs, but the Lions right up there with everybody else.
Yeah, good teams find a way to win games in which they played bad, and so they were still able to overcome a lot of their own mistakes. The 49ers, they had a 23-20 victory over the Buccaneers, and Christian McCaffrey making his season debut. A lot of that overshadowed, though, about what took place on the sideline between Debo Samuel and Jake Moody, their long snapper.
Well,
you guys probably all saw
this. Moody's the kicker. The long snapper was the one that was in the crosshairs of Debo and the man that he was targeting. And then Debo swipes at him, and then he catches Jake Moody. Jake Moody was the one being trash talked. The long snapper comes over and tries to rescue him, and then Moody's holding the long snapper back because he's like, dude, it's not a good idea. This is a weird situation for me because I understand Debo's frustration. The problem is that when you wear that C on your chest, it's not something you can do. You can't go over there and start pushing at the throat of the long snapper and blaming the kicker. And I think they both came out afterwards and said, hey, it's a bad moment. But Jake Moody's in his second year, and you're not going to come out publicly and talk trash about your captain and Debo Samuel. But at the same time, Debo, there's a lot of inside conversations that need to happen in that locker room, or else that's something that's going to fester, and it already has. It's a 5-4 team. Christian McCaffrey comes back. He does just enough, but it was it's a bad look for Debo. In the end, San Fran gets the win, and a couple highlight reel plays from Baker Mayfield we probably need to talk about, but the Debo thing just sticks out to you.
Yeah, Tabor Pepper is the long snapper, yeah. And first off, two things. Long snappers are guys I don't think you normally want to mess with. They're unique.
Unique take.
They're unique.
What do you feel like, he knows jiu-jitsu or something?
Well, no, I just think first off, they're normally kind of strong, weird dudes. And I mean Liam McCullough is a different dude in a good way. And I've been around him. He's a Falcons long snapper. Josh Harris was a great dude, but he's from Georgia, and I think he went to Auburn. But he was a guy I wasn't going to mess with, but. You also, I wouldn't mess with a guy named Tabor. Of course, I guess if your name's Debo, maybe you should.
I was going to say,
maybe,
dude,
not afraid of anybody.
That's not what you want to do either.
Yeah, I think where you nailed it was the C on his chest. It's unacceptable for a captain to act that way. Captains are given that.
Given the title for a reason.
Yeah, and you need to act like it at all times. And it's also just to me, good teammates do things behind closed doors.
Yeah, can we talk just a minute about Baker Mayfield in the play? I don't know if either of you guys saw it, but he stiff arms Nick Bosa and just stiff arms him for like 20 yards. It was like a scene off of NFL Blitz, and then throws a first down completion. Did you guys see that?
Yes, yeah. I saw the play. It was incredible. And then everyone talking about how it's one of the best plays that they've ever seen. Like I said, I disagree with that, but yeah. I think Tom Brady had a lot of high praise for him on that broadcast.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And but I was going to bring up the Bucs anyway. They've now lost their fourth straight game. And again, Baker Mayfield trying to will them to victory, but didn't work. And so they're in a tough spot now.
Yeah, and I've been inundated with the Bucs. I have an easy schedule. We're done. Tweets. I'm talking about us and the Falcons. Yeah, their schedule lightens up a little bit, but they're still gotcha games. They've still got the Panthers are playing their best football in like 3 years, maybe four, with Bryce Young suddenly figuring it out. And
Bryce Young had a celebration this weekend that was interesting, but yeah,
it's hard for me not to be happy for him and the fact that he's kind of found some footing. New Orleans is clearly not dead. They might be a long shot for a playoff hunt, but they're not a dead man walking. They're a team that can get you. We've seen that. And they've got a little bit of revenge to get with Tampa Bay. So there's a lot to be played out, but Tampa Bay is definitely behind the eight ball, and this loss was the 49ers and all their dysfunction did the Falcons a favor this weekend.
Yep.
The Panthers now 3-7 on the season after going to Munich, Germany, and beating the Giants 20-17 in overtime, in which the Giants didn't even get a chance to go through with their possession in overtime because the ball was fumbled. And then Carolina able to kick a game-winning field goal to take a victory for Bryce Young now in his second start since returning from being benched.
Yeah, and obviously the first back-to-back wins for Bryce Young and the Panthers and everything else that comes along with it. We need to look in our fantasy league at Drew Lock because he's the backup for the Giants, and I have to think that the Daniel Jones experiment is probably coming to a close in New York.
Well,
he's not been good at all.
I'm not sure we wanted to publicly announce that to the guys that listen to our fantasy league. But
if they're digging that deep,
I'm wondering what Brian Daboll's future is in New York.
Rough.
Because I didn't think he came off great in the Hard Knocks off-season edition with kind of some of his stuff. And they just, you're an offensive guy. You got to find a way to do a little bit more than they've done. And it just, at times, it looks very inept offensively.
Yeah. I think he'll probably, in my opinion, he'll get one more year. Dealt with injuries to your two best players a year ago.
But
I don't know where he officially stood on the draft. But if he was the guy standing up saying, we need to draft Jaden Daniels, and they didn't, then I think it bought him a year.
It pretty much sounded like he was that guy in Hard Knocks offseason.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Do you want to do what Chicago's doing, where you got a coach that you could probably – now, I was a Eberflus keep guy. I think they should have kept him. But now it doesn't look so great there keeping him. And – You know you're going to make a change in the second. So a rookie quarterback second-year quarterback is going to go through his second offense, his second head coach, his second – you know, all these things in the NFL. That's why I wonder if you – sometimes it's not – it might not be such a bad idea to do like what Washington has done and say, let's just clean start.
Well, Dallas Cowboys would like to try anything to get something to work for that team. They lost – horribly, 34-6 to the Eagles at home. Perhaps they want to look into redoing the stadium, but according to owner Jerry Jones, that's not happening.
Yeah, this is, Tiff, one of those things where I completely agree with Jerry Jones. Like, Jerry kind of threw Mike McCarthy under the bus on this whole situation. He's like, everybody in the NFL and everybody in the world knows where the sun is going to be at certain points, and you have opportunities to do whatever you need to make sure you're not in a position at the end of the game to where you're staring into the sun.
And this is talking about CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah.
Who missed a touchdown pass because the glare was in his face.
I apologize. You haven't seen it. So CeeDee Lamb drops a touchdown ball that's thrown right at him because the sun's glaring in his face through the window at Jerry World. And CeeDee Lamb comes out afterwards and goes, we need to get curtains. Need to get curtains.
I don't know what that would look like.
Can we just,
I love it.
Like, everybody in the world knows where the sun is going to be and which direction the stadium is pointed. It's one of those things. When you build a high school baseball field, you don't put due west in center field because you'll never be able to see when you're playing baseball and the sun is going down.
But you're saying you don't when you build the stadium.
Yes.
So, and I'm not saying you can just go miraculously change things now.
Yes.
But maybe some thought should have been,
I think
put
it's
into
just,
that.
Like I said,
where the horizon is,
it pops up once or twice a year. The time changes and everything else going on. It just seems ridiculous that this is what we're talking about. As bad as Dallas played,
that's why we're talking about it because it's a bad
but
season.
That's what Jerry Jones's frustration is. We're talking about the sun on one play, and yet you just got blown out by the Eagles. Blown out by the Eagles, who have not been a great team all year, although they have been recently, and we're talking about the sun. I'm with Jerry Jones on this one. He's like, we're not going to tear the stadium down. Figure it out. Defend the other end zone. Whatever you got to do, but it's ridiculous.
But about the play call, why would you – you shouldn't have to think about that. And I'm not saying that this is what we should be talking about, or I'm kind of with Jerry Jones. I'm like, yeah, we're talking about a glare. But you had brought up everybody knowing where the sun's going to be and the play call. What if you're doing what either you're trying to dictate to the defense or you're taking what the defense is giving you? So that would have been a touchdown.
All I'm saying is the Eagles dealt with the same thing. The Eagles dealt with the same thing. Right?
So someone
Eagles,
was there to be like, you okay, have the to flip into the in field every quarter. I understand.
Right? So the Eagles dealt with the same thing, and somehow they still came away with 34 points. That's my only point. Is like, let's keep the main thing here. And let's realize that everybody that comes there is dealing with all the same issues the Cowboys are dealing with. Should they have to? Maybe not. But the conversation is not to be had immediately after game, like we're pointing at it saying that's the reason they lost. Well, they got their butt whooped.
Maybe understand it, and if I don't know who won the coin toss or who didn't, but maybe understand that, make part of your strategy of which way you want to kick.
And that's what Jerry was saying.
And
like I said, he was throwing McCarthy under the bus.
Well, and I thought Micah Parsons' comments were the most telling. Is, you know, he talks about what's going on, and he says, like, I'm not worried about Mike and Zim. He's like, they can go wherever they want to go. If the season's over, he's like, I worry about the guys, and he mentioned Zach Martin by name. This could be Zach Martin's last year. I want to hold the trophy for guys like that. That's the leadership that you want to hear from a player. And I know Micah Parsons gets a lot of flack for his podcast and what he says and that, but that's the leadership during and after a game that you want from a guy who's one of your best players.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. What you got for Mic'd Up?
Well, Tiff, we're going to talk a little more college football. I'll go over that Georgia loss to Ole Miss, which was resounding over the weekend. Also, Georgia Tech holding it down against Miami. And then when we get to Mic'd Up, you know I'm not going to let it slide on the Monday. We'll talk a little bit more about Atlanta United and what they were able to do against Inter Miami on Saturday night. They're moving on in the playoffs. Here we come, Orlando. You don't want the smoke. It's Mic'd Up, Sports Radio 910 The Game. Back here on the morning shift, Mike, Tiff, Bo, hanging out and talking a little bit of college football as we move through the segment. We'll get to Mic'd Up in just a minute. Also do Man Up coming up at 8 o'clock, and you don't want to miss Mr. Dave Archer coming up at 8:20. He'll tell you about what he saw for the Atlanta Falcons game yesterday. But nonetheless, a magical Saturday for some, Bo, and a not magical Saturday for some others. Texas is able to really destroy Florida in a lot of different ways, but I don't think that a lot of people expected much different.
I watched Georgia Tech Miami in the noon window in between traveling. No, that Aiden Warner, he's a young player.
He's a Jag
who doesn't have that experience, especially at this level, and he missed stuff, and that happens. And I'm not going to kill the guy. You go into Austin, Texas, with one of the top defenses in the country. Granted, they have played a lesser schedule than some in that conference, including Florida. But I didn't expect Aiden Warner to go in there and light it up. I was hoping that the defense could do enough, but you put a lot of pressure on your defense when they get stopped and you go three and out, and then it just starts to cave in on you.
Yeah, let me ask y'all this question. Who's under more fire today? Is it Brian Kelly or Mario Cristobal? Because obviously Brian Kelly needs to get over the Bama hump. They got destroyed in a bad way by Alabama Saturday night. And I think a lot of LSU fans are frustrated with him. At the same time, at least you won against a quality team. Mario Cristobal comes in here and is facing a Georgia Tech team playing a two-quarterback system and down to their third-string running back. And you just got outmanned and beat up front. So,
I don't believe. Maybe after the game, you can say under fire for the day for the reasons that you just laid out. But overall, no, it's their first loss on the season. Okay. It's a Miami team that has turned things around. You're the fourth ranked team, not anymore, but you were going into this thing.
Sure.
Like you were perfect on the season, and this happens. So I think, no, if anyone's under fire, it's probably Brian Kelly for the way that the last few seasons have played out. For LSU, on top of them just getting steamrolled by Alabama.
Well, again,
I'll say this for Cristobal: you went out and spent a decent amount of NIL money on a team, and you've Booger McFarland, I think, is the one that said it. He said this team looks, you know, they look like they're poorly coached with the way they perform in games. That said, you have Wake Forest and Syracuse, and you should, and then in the ACC title game.
But
if Cristobal loses in that ACC title
game. But right now, they're not going to the ACC title game. Right now, it's SMU and Clemson.
Well, and I would, and that's, well, the Clemson and Miami don't play each other, right?
Right.
So the reality is if Miami wins out, Clemson wins out, I'm pretty positive that will be a, and I have to double check what the ACC tiebreaker rule is, but I would think that would come down to highest in the college football playoff ranking, which I think Miami would be. So what I think right now, that's today. Now, tomorrow the rankings come out, so I don't know that, but that's what I think. And I mean,
oh, you're right. Miami's still in position to make it over Clemson, even though Clemson and Miami both have one loss.
And it, yeah, it might
whatever
be,
the tiebreaker.
Well,
is.
It might be overall record. It might be over.
Clemson is 7-2. Miami's 9-1. That's
well, that conference record.
Well, I was going to say it's the conference record.
But I think, and I don't know the ACC tiebreakers. Everything is so on its head.
Yeah, it's crazy
with rules and with the expansions.
Wild
it is hard without divisions. It's a little bit harder for me to bring it down to, but I would imagine the easiest tiebreaker would either be overall or the highest in the college football playoff ranking, which to me, Miami would be right now as it stands. Miami is going to be both of those. But
and is that your, if your team has the highest ranking in the college football playoff out of the ACC teams, don't you want to see your best team in the ACC championship?
For sure.
Well, yeah,
for
but,
sure. Yeah.
But here's the thing.
I get their in-conference record, but
SMU is no slouch. They can score points. They're not a bad team. They beat they're beating their only loss is to BYU, and it was, I think, by a field goal or less in the second week of the season. And BYU is looks pretty good right
sure.
now. So
sure.
what I would say is that if Miami was to make the ACC title game and somehow losing that, they could find themselves on the outside looking in because of one, the strength of schedule or lack thereof, and two, how they won games this year.
Well, you know who's not on the outside looking in? Atlanta United.
Into the near corner. Amador trying to run it down. That's it! They blow for full time! They blow for full time! Atlanta United has pulled the greatest upset in the history of Major League Soccer! They have knocked out Messi! They have knocked out Miami! Atlanta United is going to the conference semifinals!
It wasn't one game. It wasn't fluky. It wasn't a 1-0. It wasn't won on a PK. It was won by Atlanta United digging deep without their head coach they started the year with and their top three players. You don't have Yorgos Giakoumakis. Caleb Wiley is shipped off. Atlanta United is barren. They're at the bottom of the standings, and yet somehow they find a way to continue forward. Just an incredible Saturday night. I'm not sure how much people out there got to see of this, but when I tell you I was glued to the television, or actually the iPad at the time that I was watching, I got to watch the end of it on television, but Atlanta United just digging deep in this game, guys, and able to do things that nobody expected of them a month and a half ago, able to dig deep and get it. When we were talking to Brad Guzan, and we were live at the golf tournament, and we asked him about decision day, right? And he was like, look, man, a couple things got to fall our way, but it's coming up, and all we can do is all we can do. And you know what Brad Guzan did? He captained this team to some incredible victories over the last couple of weeks, man. Just insane what Atlanta United's been able to do.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, people were trying to run him out of town.
I feel like they were trying to do that going into this season.
Yeah, it's a good point. And look at him. He's one of the he's not single-handedly the reason, but he's one of the main reasons you're there. And don't forget what he is to this team.
He's the leader.
He's the OG.
Walking in the locker room with Arthur Blank afterwards and celebrating with Arthur Blank has to be one of the coolest moments I've seen in some time. And we'll talk more about it, but I want to relive a couple of moments in this game. First of all, you are 1-0. Then it's 1-1, then it's 2-1. And then let's talk about Jamal Tiare getting this goal in the 21st minute.
And Martinez will give it away to Ronald Hernandez. Flicked ahead to Schlees, to McCarty. Pot down the middle, Moronchuk onside behind the defense. Moronchuk to Tiare, shot, score! Two goals in less than 2 minutes! Atlanta United leads!
I'm trying to, at this moment, explain to my friends that are just Bama football fans, how big this is. And I'm trying to put this into context in terms of college football. And the only thing I could come up with is that you get to the SEC title game and somehow you know, Mississippi State makes it in and beats Texas in the SEC title game or something like that. You know, something along those lines. And so you continue on from there. TRA, it's a 2-2 game until you get a little bit later on, and that's when our guard Bartosz Sleash comes home.
TRA is down behind the play. A Miami player down. As it's rolled back to Hernandez, cross the back post. Saba, it's over his head. It's going to roll to the left side of the 18. Amador's got it. Pitches to the back post. Header! Dead! It's a goal! He scores! He scores! He scores!
Well, I think it's
got chills.
I think it's a 16 seed beating a 1 in the NCAA tournament.
Is that what it is?
That's the way I would. That's
but
the
they
way.
Were deeper than 16. I know what you're saying, but
well,
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
that,
but the all right, the 16.
You're saying the fourth bracket 16.
The 68th team in that had to play a play-in game and then made the six because that's what they did. They played a play-in game essentially.
Yeah, they did. Well, they did. They played a play-in game
and then. They make the first, what was now the second round.
Beat Montreal
which,
and Joseph Martinez.
And then
game.
They play the number one overall seed, which is literally what Miami is, and they beat them. And they didn't have to beat, but the reality is, you didn't have to beat them in a 40-minute game. You had to beat them in, what, 270 minutes plus stoppage time?
Yeah.
The best
Same.
Player in the entire world.
The history of the world. The history of the world.
I mean, that is...
It's unbelievable. Tiff, I want to get your thoughts on this this player for Inter-Miami kind of falling and kind of flopping at the end during that last goal. Miami's yelling for Atlanta United to kick it out of bounds or the referee to stop play. Obviously, Atlanta's pressing on Miami's end, and they end up putting one home, but there was a lot of talk. Tata Martino, some of the other players, about they should have stopped play when the guy was down. To me, it's very clear what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop play. But I know that, you know, in past, in the football world, that you would have expected Atlanta United to stop attacking. They did not. They get the go-ahead goal.
I don't have a problem with it. not just because you know that what they were trying to do. You go in the whistle till the whistle blows, right?
Yeah.
It is common in soccer, yes. Someone gets hurt. Eventually, the ball gets kicked out.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't even happen that fast. I think they're more upset about it because it didn't happen fast enough because they were in attacking position, and that's probably why they're more so up in arms. So if this happened away from the goal and it was going as and they didn't kick it out fast enough, I don't think it would be as big of an issue for them.
And I'm pretty sure Tata came out, who is now the Miami coach, and who was obviously we know him from here when he won the title with Atlanta United. He came out and said they would that he had no issue with the way they played it. He would have done the same thing.
Exactly.
I don't care at all. You know why? Because they're dirty. The way they treated my goalie.
The way they treated Baggers.
You're the moral compass.
Yeah, you're damn right. I am. In this instance, let me tell you something.
When
you shove my guy in the back, and then you get in his face and you taunt him, that's punk ass stuff. And I don't. That shouldn't be tolerated. They all should have been carded. They should have carded the whole team.
One guy takes the ball away from him. The other guy shoves him into the back of the net, and the other guy gets in his face. And somehow Brad Guzan's the one being talked to by the referee.
That's garbage. That's garbage refereeing,
and
it's garbage sportsmanship.
I'm with you. I'll moral compass that thing with you. I will moral compass this thing. I feel good about that.
I'm a lot of things, but I'm not dirty. All right?
It was ridiculous.
Listen, DJ Red Card, I don't think you're the one to talk about physicality in games.
I'm not.
Yeah, your dad has confirmed that you've gotten multiple red cards.
No, he doesn't even know.
The Intimidator.
I take his word for
it. The Intimidator, no. Tiffany Blackman.
No, don't take anything. All right, this hour brought to you by Zara, smart, lasting, clean. We are going into our 8 o'clock hour where these guys will probably get burned, likely, based on the picks that they made. On Friday, going into the weekend. Man Up is next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.